It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and bring the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Now.
And welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show, live from Madison, Wisconsin, home of the front lines of the class war, and it looks like victory. A little bit of victory today, according to Pat Sims over at the Wall Street Journal. She says, quote, in her little inner tweet, Wisconsin Dem Senator Chris Larson says today he expects three Republican senators to soon request that the budget repair bill be withdrawn. That means that all of the toxic stuff that we've been talking about that are in this bill, they're talking about withdrawing. Now, you got to look across the country and you've got to see other governors looking to this and going, well, you know, there's some... This is how you do not run a major policy campaign. Scott Walker has pretty much shown his amateur status. He's playing in the little fishbowl out here in the sea. Got himself into a whole lot of trouble, and there's talk of a whole lot more trouble coming down, according to some sources who are looking at this prank phone call. What's interesting? He wouldn't take a phone call from any of the Democrats. But he will take a phone call from a prankster who he believed to be conservative billionaire David Koch. One of the Koch brothers, the billionaire family who's funded many of the ultra-extreme conservative groups like Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works and all those attack groups. That's where the money's coming from. And what's interesting, I got to be honest, it's amazing to me that you look at the fact that this guy won't take a call from Democrats, but he'll pick up the phone and talk to somebody who believes is David Koch, which right immediately pops into my head. How often is David Koch calling Scott Walker? You know, how much communication are they having? How frequently does this happen? And how much money is going into this guy's pocket? They talked for about at least 20 minutes. Which again, kind of, if you're in the middle of the battle of your life, as governor of this state, are you going to take 20 minutes out of your day, to talk to just anybody? No. You're going to talk to the guy who's filling your coffers. You're going to talk to the guy who's got the messaging machine and can bring tens or 20 or hundreds of buses, of thugs here, to protest the union people here like they did last Saturday with all these tea twizzlers who came to town looking for trouble. Every person that I talked to who was here on Saturday said those tea baggers, they were there for trouble. They were hyped up. They were geared up. They had their cameras and their video recorders. They had everything ready. They were praying. In fact, they had, from what I was told, they had been trained on how to get people to react. And amazingly, the people of Wisconsin didn't react. And what I love to hear is the governor say, well, you know, all these people are, you know, from outside of here. They're thugs from outside. No. The nice people of Wisconsin, they took the brow beating that the Teach Whistlers gave them and let them go on their merry way. And, you know, it speaks testaments. It's volumes about how nice these people are and how this is a community thing, not just a special interest thing. As the mainstream corporate controlled for profit media is trying so desperately to frame this, to frame it as, wow, this is just the last throes of special interest. No, these are tens of thousands of working families, tens of thousands of citizens going to their government and saying, hey, you know what? This is not what we signed you up for. We wanted you to create jobs. We wanted you to do things that were going to help our economy, not destroy them. And this phone call, you've got to listen to this. Go to our Facebook page, the Rick Smith Show, where working people talk. And we've got the links to the video up there, of the phone call. You've got to hear this. It is just, it's absolutely amazing at the calm, at the assuredness, the arrogance of Scott Walker as he went through question after question, you know, and basically laid out the entire plan. Like they'd had this conversation time and time again. And, you know, a couple of things really jumped out at me. The first thing that really caught me and grabbed me by the throat, Koch asks the questions. He goes, his statement, well, right. We'll back you any way we can. But what we were thinking about was the crowds. Plant some troublemakers. We were thinking about planting some troublemakers. And Walker's response was kind of interesting. He goes, the only problem with that, because we thought about it. Let me back up. Because we thought about it. So it's already popped into Walker's mind, the governor of the state of Wisconsin, that, oh, we could plant some troublemakers, gin up some trouble, and we can come down with the iron fist and use the National Guard that we threatened to use to put these people in their place. So after he says, yeah, we thought about it, he says, the problem with my only gut reaction would be right now the lawmakers I've talked to have just completely had it with them. Meaning those people. The public's not really fond of this. The teachers union did some polling and focus groups, I think, and found that the public turned on them the minute they closed school down for a couple of days. The guys we've got left are largely from out of the state, and I keep dismissing them in all of my press conferences, saying they're mostly out of state. My only fear would be is there is a ruckus caused is that people would scare people into thinking maybe the governor should, settle to avoid these problems. And he goes on to say, well, it's just a bunch of, you know, 60s liberals, let them protest, you know, all that nonsense. But at the end, but amazingly to me, we already thought of that. We thought about that. That's played into their calculus. So going back to, you know, the more things change, the more they're exactly the same. You've got the same kind of people running these offices. And you go down the list. I mean, right from the beginning, he starts off talking about this guy named Tim Cullen, who's a Republican who, you know, he's pretty sure he's got him in his pocket. Don't worry about it. Everything's okay. And Koch goes, oh, all right, I'll have to give that man a call. And what's interesting is Walker goes, well, wait a minute. Well, actually, in his case, I wouldn't call him. I'll tell you why. He's pretty reasonable, but he's not one of us. So I would let him be, meaning that he's not willing to play the game that the Koch brothers and the Walkers and the Kasichs and, you know, I dare say the Corbetts and the Daniels are playing. You know, I look at this and it's just amazing stuff. And, you know, then he goes into what his plans are. You know, he's saying, well, we're just going to starve them out. They're going to have to come pick up their paychecks at some point. And, you know, we're gonna threaten the workers next week. We're gonna send out warning letters that they're all gonna be laid off. And, you know, all this trickery, all of this, deceit, all of this backdoor politic, all of this nonsense that they're, you know, that they've already decided to do, I'm sure months and even years ago. But the whole planning trouble thing to me just grabbed me. The other part that I thought was interesting is they've been talking about PATCO too. And as we've been saying on the program, PATCO was that moment during 1981 where businesses said, whoa, wait a minute. That's our guy in the White House. He just gave us the green light to go ahead and crush those workers. So he's talking about PATCO. And it's pretty interesting because he says, you know, well, basically, this was Reagan breaking down the Soviet Union. When the Soviets saw Reagan go after his own workers and what he would do to them, they were afraid of him. And he was trying to take some of that and say, look, that's what we need to do. We need to stand up and be firm here, and we need to take them on and destroy them as we would any of our political enemies, take them into the square and gut them in public. This is what they're trying to do. This isn't about saving the budget. This isn't about helping taxpayers. This isn't about better governance. This isn't about any of that stuff. This is revenge. This is hatred. This is political payback, pure and simple. And I find it quite interesting that you look at the fact that they're talking about in this one piece of legislation, so much destruction, so much toxicity, so many handouts. Privatizing their power plants, getting rid of the Badger Care like our adult basic. This destruction of union rights, of really a voice. Even though the people have already said we're willing to give whatever needs to be done to balance the budget. I mean, the workers have already said we're willing to chip in. And I always go back to it, and I don't understand it. I really don't. How it is that asking for wealth to be redistributed in a way that benefits everybody and not just a handful. How in the hell is that socialism? But yet, when we've got to pick up all the pieces after the banks and Wall Street and the billionaires like the Koch brothers destroy our economy, somehow, Jake, that is somehow patriotic. Us getting the broom and the shovel and cleaning up all the mess that they've left.
Well, I think the irony is, Rick, I think some of them have overstated their case. I think this is a classic example of the enemy going a bridge too far. He's showing some real cracks. Talking to some people at the rally tonight, Rick, you get the feeling that from the inside, the information is slowly coming out that some of his Republican colleagues aren't necessarily on the same team as he is. They're not as hardcore. They're more centrist because they are conservative, but they're more centrist conservative. They're getting an awful lot of heat, and they're starting to get cold feet. One thing that Walker said, he's going to wait them out. I think this time is on the side of the workers.
I hope you're right, because, you know, every day you're seeing thousands of people, you know, marching into the Capitol, people who are staying overnight, people who are dedicated to this. And when we come back a little later in the program, I want to talk about the media comments that he made, because, you know, even he admits, you know, fake news on Fox is in their pockets. He's doing all the shows, all the good conservative shows, to keep all of the minions in line, to keep all of the simple, right marching down the path towards the end. And what's interesting is the end is for all of us, even the ones who are supporting him. And that's the thing that bothers me, that this fight, you know, and we've seen only a handful of people who have had anything bad to say. And, you know, we saw the teabagger guy walking around, and people were, hey, how you doing? You know, it was just the nicest event here. But at the end of it, we're all in this together. All in this together. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the ads that the governor asked for and some of the help that he asked for from the Koch brothers. Is that legal? We're going to find out from our good friend, Irwin Aronson. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
We
to the Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin's working families are vowing to last one day longer than the governor trying to rip away collective bargaining rights as tens of thousands of people kept up the robust, passionate battle to defend the American dream in Madison. The Madison-based South Central Labor Federation officially endorsed a general strike if collective bargaining rights are taken from Wisconsin public employees. Joining the Madison resistance rallies, IBEW President Ed Hill urged continued solidarity in this epic fight for workers' human rights.
The powers are all lined up against you with everything that they have. But we will resist every assault and carry the day, won't we? And the only way to do that is through solidarity.
We asked President Hill if workers and their unions should be prepared for a general strike if these collective bargaining rights are taken away from public workers.
I think we should be.
Wisconsin AFL-CIO President Phil Neuenfeld derided a New York Times article that said that Wisconsin union solidarity was fraying.
Because I don't see it. What I'm seeing is working families and unions coming together like they never come together before.
Yeah! Solidarity forever.
Thousands continue to pack the state capitol rotunda, and hundreds are sleeping overnight in the rotunda, keeping a constant vigil in defense of collective bargaining rights. Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin President Malin Mitchell said he and other firefighters slept in the capitol rotunda with other protesters Monday night.
They told us that the governor was possibly going to kick everybody out at midnight. But I like to think and I like to hope that because we slept there, that they decided maybe to do that another night.
Dave Harswick of the Wisconsin Education Association says the fiery workers' movement ignited in Madison must not be allowed to go out.
We have just begun this fight. We must take this home. This fire that's been lit here cannot die. It cannot die.
Wisconsin's mass resistance to attacks on collective bargaining has helped spur Indiana Democratic state senators to walk out, blocking a Republican vote on anti-union legislation there. And there was a union working family lobby day of action in Michigan in the fight against attacks on workers and unions there. Carol Turner is with UAW Local 6888 in Michigan.
It's anti-worker, anti-union legislation, and they want to totally annihilate us.
Day 9 of the battle for Wisconsin labor rights included Jesse Jackson and Wisconsin Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin walking in solidarity with workers. Out on the Capitol steps, the Raging Grannies sang labor songs, and a Dropkick Murphys song closed out one of the Madison rallies.
We gotta take the bastards down.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real. You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
Well, you know, that's what the people here in Madison, Wisconsin are doing and have been doing for the last, week and a half. They've been standing, they've been marching, they've been clapping, dancing, singing, having a festival, out here, but they are here for a very good reason, and they all know that. But you know, at the end of it, they can still have a good time. I think it was Emma Goldman who said, "If I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution." Well, these folks are definitely doing that. You know, the Koch brothers in this state are pretty powerful folks. They gave Scott Walker's campaign $43,000 directly. You remember the Koch brothers gave $1 million to the Republican Gubernatorial Association, the Governor's Association, so they could buy attack ads. It turns out they're spending $320,000 on television ads for this right here. How's that legal? I'm not sure, but that's why we're going to have our good friend Erwin Aronson, our favorite attorney, to come on the program. Erwin, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for you taking time to be out in the place where God's work is being done, and your crew are right there. That's fantastic. I feel almost as if I should be the host and I should interview you tonight, because I need to know what's going on right there in the heartland of America, at the place where ground zero has been reestablished for all of us.
It is absolutely an amazing atmosphere. Tens of thousands of people marching in the streets. And like I said, it is a festive occasion. But people are deadly serious about what they're talking about. They've got they want the governor to walk away from this theft of their rights.
Well, it's understandable, and you're being charitable by calling it a theft of their rights. It certainly looks a lot to me as if some in the North is trying to reenact the old South, and we should all be under the thumb of Massa, and Massa looks a whole lot like Governor Walker.
Yeah, or like David Koch. Because
well, that's an interesting one, David Koch. You know the Koch brothers, they inherited their money. They earned it the old-fashioned way, you know?
Yep.
And the Koch brothers are trading in Wisconsin and all around the country on that really wonderful little piece of Supreme Court jurisprudence that was enacted last year called Citizens United, which stands for this insane proposition that corporations are people too. And because we have a right to free speech under the Constitution, as people are allowed to give unbridled amounts of money to support their political agendas.
Well, let me
That's
ask
what
you
the Koch brothers are doing.
Let me ask you this, Irwin, though. I understand that was the decision. But in this case, if you listen to the call, which, again, I don't know if you've heard, but it's amazing at how at ease Walker is talking with David Koch and is perfectly okay with the fact that one of the Koch brothers just called him out of the blue. But he had the security of knowing that he could ask this billionaire to run ads and spread the message and do the kind of things that Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works and all of these attack groups have been doing and put out their message. Is that legal that a sitting governor can ask one of these hate think groups or whatever you want to call them to go run ads for him?
Well, it's certainly the request itself is certainly not illegal given the breadth of the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United. The question about legality is, where was Walker when he did this? Was he in the people's house? Was he sitting in the governor's office on the governor's phone pursuing this political agenda? Because he admitted in that response to what was, in effect, a phony phone call that that's exactly what this was, a political agenda. He was looking for bragging rights because he thought he lit a national fuse for the agenda that they're pursuing, and indeed he's part right. He did light a national fuse, and people are gathering in every corner of the United States right now. But one would think, certainly here in Pennsylvania, we would know because the current governor and former attorney general has prosecuted members of the General Assembly, Democrats and Republicans alike, for using their legislative offices to pursue political business. And if Walker did the same thing, it certainly would be criminal conduct in Pennsylvania, according to Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett.
So in bringing up Corbett, the reality is what's going on here in Wisconsin, and what I've been saying all week, this is that the front lines of the class war, Will, this latest battle in the class war. If things were to go the way Walker wanted them here in Pennsylvania, here in Wisconsin, I do believe they would surely sweep across the country, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, at some point down the road. What are your thoughts?
Well, very clearly, if you listen carefully to the conversation that Governor Walker thought he had with one of the billionaire Koch brothers, he was going down the list of governors, and he didn't get to Pennsylvania in the course of that conversation before the caller who had represented himself to be David Koch moved on in the conversation. But certainly Pennsylvania is at risk. People like Representative Metcalf in Pennsylvania are introducing right-to-work legislation in the Pennsylvania General Assembly even as we speak. The moderate Republican who had been minority chair of the House Labor Committee during the last session when the Democrats had majority control of the State House did not succeed in becoming the chair of the Labor Committee when the Republicans took over. A very different person was placed in that role. And we have some certain issues in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. There are forces at work who have been financed by the same big business community that stands to benefit by this kind of law, this kind of legal approach. It's for somebody like me, it's almost anathematic to refer to it as a law. It is a political agenda. It's not a law. But the danger is here, it's now, and it's real, and I think that's precisely why so many Pennsylvanians have been intrigued enough and excited enough and interested enough and just focused enough to stand in solidarity with their brothers and sisters in Wisconsin and in Indiana and in Ohio and in Michigan and in Kansas, where the Koch brothers' headquarters can be found, and are speaking up. I'm reminded tonight, as we are on the verge of day 10 of this, of the Billy Joel song, We Didn't Light the Fire. They lit this fire.
Yep.
But it's burning. And it's always been burning, and they just opened it up. And the winds are blowing that fire across the country, and we will face challenges, and we will meet and greet those challenges, not with joy, but certainly with vigilance and diligence, and we're going to overcome these challenges. I keep asking people to help me understand if this Walker guy is to be believed. His story is that we need to do these draconian things like automatically decertify unions and abrogate collective bargaining agreements and compel unions to have elections every single year to be recertified as something having something to do with balancing the budget. And I can't understand it. But what I really can't understand is if he is such a good heads-up, understanding, competent manager, why does he need a law to say no to the labor organizations that exist there? He can't do it himself. He needs the cover of a statute to do that. He doesn't know how to negotiate, or he's afraid to negotiate. He's afraid that even he would give in somehow to reasonable demands, that he needs a law. I ask people to do the mirror image of this. Imagine, if you will, with me for a moment, that if in Wisconsin a liberal Democratic governor was elected and had substantial liberal progressive majorities in the state House and state Senate, and they faced an unbalanced budget, they faced a budget deficit, and the thing they did was increase unemployment compensation benefits and dramatically liberalize eligibility, and the next thing they did to finance that was to impose a big new tax on corporations doing business there for everybody except maybe a progressive-leaning tech sector that is developing there. And then for good measure, have a ban on corporations and corporate players like the Koch brothers from making political donations without first getting the permission of each and every one of their shareholders so that they can't use their power and their economic power to repeal the appropriate laws that had just been passed because of a decrepit economy and a declining economy. Imagine what that would be, because that's exactly the mirror image of what Walker has proposed.
Right. They'd be calling it exactly what I'm calling this. I don't think this is anything but a Machiavellian political payback, taking your enemy into the square and gutting him in public.
Well, it's not just taking your enemy into the square and gutting him in public. It is also saying that you are going to have that enemy for the rest of the history of the country, and therefore you have to strip that enemy of its right to ever exist again.
Right.
You have to say to working people who have chosen to serve us by being public employees, who protect our children, who serve our parents, who take kids to school on the school bus, who shovel the snow on the streets, that they are a permanent underclass in this society. Imagine comparing this to the clarion call of John Kennedy when he was sworn into the presidency of the United States, who recognized that public service was a higher calling and encouraged people to set things aside to adopt that higher calling. Now we have people like Scott Walker who tell us that public service is at one level theft when working people do it, and is a way to make millions when he does it for his corporate raider buddies.
Yeah, and you know the thing is, and again going back to this idea that this is something about the budget. You know, the unions here have agreed to concessions. They've agreed to numerous furlough days. The workers, you know, they're still willing to chip in and tighten their belts. This isn't about the budget. This isn't about any of that. It's about control. Let me ask you this, Irwin. You know, one of the things that Scott Walker talked about in his phony phone call that he thought was real was the Patco strike. Or was the Patco firings? I think there should have been a strike, but the Patco firings that happened, he looked at that as a great thing. And this is one of the first times I think a Republican has come out and said, well, this was a good thing, and it was a good thing we did it, and it's what brought down the Soviet Union. It gave Reagan all this power, you know, because basically he made the Soviets say, well, look what he does to his own people. What do you think he'll do to us? I'm curious, you were heavily involved during the time of the Patco strike and the firings. Give me a little background on this.
Well, the relationship of this action of Scott Walker's to balancing a budget, candidly, Rick, is somewhat like a dog's relationship to a fire hydrant. And the relationship that his immediate action now has to the Patco situation is less than non-existent. We need to remember that here, he proposed to balance a budget by doing two sets of things. One was a series of givebacks, takeaways, abrogations, decimations, if you will, of existing collective bargaining agreements with public sector employees, representatives. In the Patco situation, Reagan just fired everybody. Patco never offered to deal with those concessions. Concessions were never on the table. Here, Walker has this situation where he asked for concessions. The labor organizations representing their members have announced that they'll accept those concessions. And he still says he has to destroy their organizations. And these are two very different things. And the fact of the matter is that, if the truth be told, Reagan's action did do something. And it did the same kind of something that Scott Walker is trying to effectuate, and that is bring Reagan closer to his corporate sponsor buddies, just like Walker's trying to get closer to his corporate sponsor buddies. But it didn't do anything for air traffic control. It made the airways less safe, and they remain less safe now, 31 years later. It caused chaos in the skies. It caused chaos in the country. And you know, the Soviet Union did come down, but it had precious little to do with Ronald Reagan. You know, a speech that said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall, wasn't exactly the same as Jack Kennedy standing at that wall on the other side and saying, Ich bin ein Berliner. This was not a visionary political step. This was a crude, ham-fisted punch in the face to people who had served their country.
I agree. You know, here's the thing. I want to bring this back home to Pennsylvania, this whole scenario here. Here, the reports that I'm getting is they have a third Republican senator who wants Bill withdrawn and starting to start over. I look at Indiana, where the governor there and the Republicans have agreed to withdraw the right to work bill. But the Democrats in Indiana are saying, we want the vouchers off the table as well. So bringing this back to Indiana, to Pennsylvania, you see what's going on here in Wisconsin, there in Indiana. What can we help our Democratic minority accomplish when we've seen that the minority parties in both of these states have had some success?
Well, I think that you have to recognize that in Pennsylvania, and this may be true for the other jurisdictions as well, the other states as well, but I'm not sure because I'm not familiar enough. The Republican Party in Pennsylvania right now is under the yoke of a tyranny of its own minority. Many of the leadership of the Republican Party, particularly in the State House of Representatives, are not from the mainstream of Pennsylvania's Republican Party. And as a labor movement, I iterate and reiterate that while I happen to be a Democrat, we are Democrats and we are Republicans. We support our friends and we oppose our enemies, regardless of their political affiliation.
Right.
And so it's really not a question of what can the minority party do. It's a question about what can a majority of right-thinking, contemplative Pennsylvania legislators, Democrats and Republicans, do to stop and hold back the tyranny of the minority and use that tyranny in its best form as Americans to not only stop this evisceration of the right of one sector of society to live by another sector of society, but to move the ball forward, to advance our society, to do something, imagine, make progress. Make progress for all the things that government exists to take care of. Government, of course, exists to take care of things that we can't take care of on our own. We can't adequately take care of educating our children on our own. That's why we have a public school system. It should be the great equalizer, the great leavener, if will, in a democratic society. And maybe, just maybe, this helps us down that road. Maybe this situation helps us to deal with the idea that we're facing this absurdity of wanting to divest the citizens of Pennsylvania, the shareholders, if you will, of Pennsylvania, of a very successful business that brings in $400 million a year to our state treasury, the state wine and spirit store system. Maybe we have some opportunities here, but maybe what we need to do is keep our eyes open and our heads up and recognize that we happen to be blessed with, in Wisconsin, for example, 14 good and true, loyal Democratic senators who are standing up with us on this issue. But there are also two Republican senators, I understand, in Wisconsin, who are standing up with us on this issue, and now possibly a third.
Right.
That doesn't make this a Republican issue. This makes this a lunatic issue.
Excellent, okay? Excellent point.
And Scott Walker is a lunatic. When you reach for the big brass ring 6 or 8 weeks into your first real major political foray in your life, you better hope you catch it, because it's a very long and rapid fall.
Good point. Irwin, I appreciate your thoughts, your comments. Always great to talk to you.
Always great to talk to you, and please keep us posted on what's going on at what I call Ground Zero, and we'll see you back here safe and sound, I'm sure, real soon, but don't leap too early, because we need to have the real reports, and we get those real reports from the Rick Smith Show.
Thanks so much, Irwin. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Take a little trip to Irony, Arizona. It's not a town, but a concept, though the state's political leaders don't seem at all familiar with it. Claiming to represent the will of the people, they've enacted the most freewheeling gun-toting laws in America. No state has fewer restrictions. Which brings us to Irony. A recent poll reveals that far from being a wild bunch of devil-may-care gun-slinging ideologues, a majority of Arizonans actually want tougher gun laws. Overall, 55% of the residents favor more stringent controls. Of course, this is the state where Jared Lee Loeffner gunned down Representative Gabrielle Giffords and a parking lot full of people in January. Using a 30-bullet semi-automatic pistol, the shooter pulled off his massacre in just a few seconds. Yet, the intractable gun lobby's absolutist political apologists see no problem with such mass-slaughtering machines being loose on the land. The problem, explains Oklahoma Senator Tom Coburn, ironically a medical doctor, is that Loeffner is, quote, a mentally deranged person who should not have had access to a gun. Wow, that's progress. Let's have a sanity test before you can buy a murderous 30-bullet weapon in an unregulated gun show. In fact, New Jersey Senator Frank Lautenberg has introduced a bill in Congress to require just that. But wait, where does Senator Coburn go? Neither he nor any of his Republican colleagues have signed on as co-sponsors of this tiny step toward gun sanity, a step that could have saved many of the dead and wounded in that Arizona parking lot. This is Jim Hightower saying, now back to irony. The poll found that 92% of Arizona voters want to keep the mentally ill from buying guns, with 93% of Republicans most strongly in favor of this. Of course, good luck to them in getting their politicians to support it.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, that is absolutely the absolute truth. As people are standing together, as people are rising up, as they are fighting back, we're seeing success all across the country. You look at Indiana; they've decided to pull the right to work legislation, and in Ohio, I've heard there's talk that they're changing their bill SB5 to take the collective bargaining attack out of it. In Pennsylvania, we're not seeing those attacks yet, and maybe we won't. Maybe they will have learned the lesson from here in Wisconsin that politically, this isn't going to fly. That the people actually want to have a voice on the job. That the people actually want to become part of a union. And you know, the people over at Fake News at Fox, they never stop, never. Because yesterday we talked about the USA Today Gallup poll that was released and that said 61% of the people oppose what Walker is doing. They oppose the stripping of collective bargaining rights away. They oppose stealing these rights away from workers. They oppose it. So what does Fake News on Fox do? They put up a big graphic on their scene and it says that 61% of the people favor stealing collective bargaining rights. Oh, they're thrilled to death with it. And during the discussion, that Kill Mead, you ever seen that guy? He asked Robert Zimmerman if President Obama was taking a big risk by opposing Walker's law. And Zimmerman responded by saying that Obama was speaking up for the mainstream of our country and the mainstream of Republican governors who are not siding with Governor Walker. And Kilmeade said, well, I think Gallup, a relatively mainstream poll, has a different view. And he came out with the numbers. Said, well, you know, they're all in favor of stealing it away. And, of course, he's wrong, dead wrong. But, again, the people who are the Fox, the Fake News on Fox listeners, the viewers that they have, they're not going to check it. And they're going to take it at face value because that's how they are. And I mean, you know, are we surprised? Are we really surprised that Fox News does this? And, oh, it just, the thing is this kind of stuff happens so frequently. Either they've hired the last guy in the journalism class. They hired they hired the guy with ADD who cannot keep his mind on anything. And he screws up everything. Either they've hired him or they're doing this stuff on purpose. It's one or the other, and I'm saying they do it on purpose.
No, they absolutely do. If I can comment on the governor's so-called knowledge of the people who are coming into this state for the organizing efforts going on here in Madison. I mean, to really infer that most of these people are from out of state, just to give you an idea how far off base he was. I mean, you and I, since we've been here, Rick, we've been going to demonstrations. First time in 3-4 days, I was lucky to actually get, you know, in the inner sanctum tonight. And it started about 5, and they started to rally. And about 6 o'clock, after about an hour of the rally, all of a sudden, here comes this policeman's group. Out of nowhere, a couple dozen of them with signs, cops, Cops for Labor, and all of a sudden there's this huge outpouring of noise, and the place went nuts. Five minutes later, and they were still chanting and singing. You know how it goes, on and on and on. It's a great experience, actually. But this old man was getting tired after about 20 minutes of that. But my point is this. There was actually, and I think our listeners have been interested in this, there was actually a unionized doctors group that came in.
Yep.
And I didn't even realize that in this area they had them. So for this governor to say that these are outside agitators, these are doctors and policemen, two of the most respected professions, you know, in the country, from right here. But yet, here's the governor saying it's outside agitators. I can guarantee you that is not so. We met a few. We did meet a few. We met a few
teabaggers.
Union guys. No, we met a few union guys from Chicago, a couple here and a couple there, but the vast, vast, vast majority are from Wisconsin, I guarantee you.
Anyway, let's take a quick break. If you want to contact us, we're having phone trouble here. If you want to contact us, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We will get your email up on the air, and we'd love to hear from you from right here in Madison, Wisconsin. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make this thing happen!
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
I got a bad case. I'm putting it up. You can call me a weak survivor. I got a bad case. I'm putting it up. You can call me a weak survivor.
Yep. All these folks here, they're absolutely fired up. I got to tell you, today we were over at the Capitol again. A rally, a chance of this is what democracy looks like. All of the people coming together peacefully, having their voice heard. An amazing, amazing time. And what I found most interesting is that the working people of this festival, if you will, I hesitate to call it a protest. I mean, these are citizens of Wisconsin who've come to their government and said, hear us, and they have come, and amazingly, this is what democracy looks like. These are families who came, and you know what they did? They set up a child care area on the first floor of the Capitol building for the citizens who are here, who brought their children, who want to get into the as close as they can get, who want to be a part of it. They've got a child care area. That, my friends, is what democracy is. It's people deciding what they need and how they're going to go about fulfilling those needs. And this is a lesson that I think Scott Walker and people like Daniels and Kasich and our guy, Tom Corbett, have to think about. What are the things that the citizens of Pennsylvania demand of their government? How do we provide them? How do we pay for them? Not, I'm going to throw down the gauntlet and I'm going to go after my political enemy at all costs. Because that's what this is. That's all this is, pure and simple.
Did you notice, Rick? And I notice it more and more and more. There's quite a few groups over there that are providing food free for these people. They're so well organized that they're actually providing free. I mean, it was the last mass demonstration that you saw people handing out food. I mean, it might sound trite to some people, but these people are well organized. I can say something else. You know, if you would go in a time warp, back in the 60s, I understand Madison was really the hotbed of anti-war demonstrations. That demonstration we were at tonight, you could probably go back in the 60s, given the young people, given the tone of their dress, given the way it was carried on. It's actually a throwback, and it's not just a demonstration. It's kind of like a happening, and people get involved in that, and it's a great feeling to just be part of that.
And, you know, again, go back to this idea that this is such a peaceful event, that these folks, they're here to have their voices heard, not to cause trouble. Now, the mainstream media, they want this trouble. They want something negative to happen. The Tea Party, they came on Saturday with their goons and their cameras trying to cause problems. And, you know, I look at it in Indiana where this guy, you know, he's with CWA and had these two kids, really, I mean, they're early 20s, in his face, screaming at him, pointing their camera in his face, and just screaming at him that he's a thug and all of this stuff. And they clip a short segment out of the video where evidently he went to move his sign to block the camera, and somehow the little handheld cell phone camera that they had hit the ground. You know, and the guy wanted no part of them, but they kept at him. They kept picking at him. And the guy didn't hit him. I would have. Which is why I don't generally go to these things. Some little smart, again, FCC rules.
Imagine that.
Some little snot like the two of them would have come into my face and stuck a camera in my face and start pointing their finger in my face. One, I had snapped off their finger and shoved that camera where the sun don't shine. But that would have gotten us into trouble, and that would have gotten the kind of negative exposure that these thugs want. Because in a situation like this, it's whoever causes the trouble. And again, you know, the governor here said he'd thought about drumming up some trouble. It was on his mind. We already thought about that, he said, when the fake Koch brother said, hey, you know, why don't we drum up some trouble? Why don't we send in some people to cause some trouble? Now, you look at down in Atlanta, for instance. Down in Atlanta, SEIU was holding some rallies at the state capitol. And interestingly enough, there was a group of, well, again, you go back to this and you just, it's almost criminal in my mind. This group called Free Republic, they're one of these way, way out there right-wing groups. They had a memo that they sent out and a post on their webpage that said Atlanta Tea Party and many other groups facing off the SEIU thugs on Wednesday. It said members of the various Tea Party, 912, and freedom-oriented folks in the Atlanta area will be assembling in the vicinity of the Georgia State Capitol this coming Wednesday after 4 p.m. We'll be providing balance to the ravings of the passengers aboard the SEIU thug bus, which is scheduled to vomit forth its stooges at the same place and time. If you want to join us for the 3-hour drive to Atlanta, come on. Now, they go on to say, and again, this is one of those amazing things that grabs you by the throat and goes, this is scary times. They write the advice that attendees are requested to be flexible in your attire. You know, you got to be flexible in your attire because there appears to be some regulations re-armed protests on Washington Street side of the Capitol. So you need to be flexible in your attire. Wink, wink, nod, nod. We'll attempt, but no promises to get some additional clarity regarding the situation. So, you know, they're encouraging their people to, you know, to arm up, bring your guns, boys. We're going after the thug bus. I wonder if these folks looked in the mirror. It's this kind of stuff that scares me. You get these crazy right-wing groups out there who think, oh, we're gonna show them, we're gonna bring our guns. And I know there are some who'd say, well, maybe the SEIU people should have guns, and well, that's how you end up like Libya. And, oh, that's a bit extreme, Rick. Well, you know, I look at Indiana. Jeff Cox, a deputy attorney general for the state of Indiana. He's got his viewpoints about what's going on here in Wisconsin. So in response to a Mother Jones tweet this weekend reporting that riot police might be used to clear the protesters from the Capitol building in Madison, Cox tweeted back, use live ammunition. Think about that for a second. Cox has been one of these people who he's held his position that protesters should be killed when confronted on Twitter by Mother Jones's Adam Weinstein, writing that against thugs physically threatening legally elected state legislators and governor, you're right, I advocate deadly force. And it almost sounds to me as you go through some of this stuff, because this guy's really way out there on the fringe. He has had a long record of inflammatory rhetoric against people like Robert Reich and especially SEIU, who he's called brown shirts, wrote one time that kill, kill, annihilate. Is this the kind of elected person that you want? I mean, really, is this what we need? I don't think so. And I think Irwin was right. You know, this isn't a Democratic or a Republican issue. This is a sanity issue at this point. Find me reasonable people. Find me people who aren't playing nuts. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, the Lulus on the extreme right, they want nothing but trouble, Jake.
You're absolutely right. I guess my question is, how does someone like this exist in our political system, that he can actually threaten the public with killing them for exercising their constitutional rights and not be destroyed in the political sense? I'm sorry, this isn't a left-right issue. This is just a basic, fundamental constitutional right issue. How is this man allowed to flourish in our system? I don't know that it says a lot for the electorate in that state to allow a man like this to flourish. It just defies logic.
It is what it is. And, you know, the more I look at this, the more I say, you know, at some point I'm hoping that rational thought comes back. And like Irwin said, in Pennsylvania, maybe we're a little luckier than other states. I'm not really sure that we have a split in the majority party between those who want good governance and those who are just completely off their rockers. That's something that, as you look down the road, is something that may save us.
I don't think Pennsylvania, I've lived, you haven't, but I've lived all my life in Pennsylvania, even when we had Republican administrations, even when they were Republican conservative, they were mainstream, and someone like this would not be allowed in public office in our state.
Anyway, if you want to contact us, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Again, we're having some phone troubles. When we come back, we're going to talk to Nick Bunker. He works on economic policy at the Center for American Progress. We're back after this.
Blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin's working families are vowing to last one day longer, and the governor, trying to rip away collective bargaining rights, as tens of thousands of people kept up the robust, passionate battle to defend the American dream in Madison. The Madison-based South Central Labor Federation officially endorsed a general strike if collective bargaining rights are taken from Wisconsin public employees. Joining the Madison resistance rallies, IBEW President Ed Hill urged continued solidarity in this epic fight for workers' human rights.
The powers are all lined up against you with everything that they have. But we will resist every assault and tyranny they will we. And the only way to do that is through solidarity.
We asked President Hill if workers and their unions should be prepared for a general strike if these collective bargaining rights are taken away from public workers.
I think we should be.
Wisconsin AFL-CIO President Phil Neuenfeld derided a New York Times article that said that Wisconsin union solidarity was fraying.
Because I don't see it. What I'm seeing is working families and unions coming together like they never come together before.
Solidarity forever.
Thousands continue to pack the state capitol rotunda, and hundreds are sleeping overnight in the rotunda, keeping a constant vigil in defense of collective bargaining rights. Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin President Malin Mitchell said he and other firefighters slept in the capitol rotunda with other protesters Monday night.
They told us that the governor was possibly going to kick everybody out at midnight. But I like to think and I like to hope that because we slept there, that they decided maybe to do that another night.
Dave Harswick of the Wisconsin Education Association says the fiery workers' movement ignited in Madison must not be allowed to go out.
We have just begun this fight. We must take this home. This fire that's been lit here cannot die. It cannot die.
Wisconsin's mass resistance to attacks on collective bargaining has helped spur Indiana Democratic state senators to walk out, blocking a Republican vote on anti-union legislation there. And there was a union working family lobby day of action in Michigan in the fight against attacks on workers and unions there. Carol Turner is with UAW Local 6888 in Michigan.
It's anti-worker, anti-union legislation, and they want to totally annihilate us.
Day 9 of the battle for Wisconsin labor rights included Jeff Jackson and Wisconsin Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin walking in solidarity with workers. Out on the Capitol steps, the Raging Grannies sang labor songs, and a Dropkick Murphys song closed out one of the Madison rallies.
We gotta take the bastards down.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
You know, if you live here in Wisconsin, according to the governor, send out some thugs, gin up some trouble. You know, hey, sell off our power plants, kick all those working people off of Badger Basic, do some of the craziness that the governor here in Wisconsin wants to do. Oh, like stealing workers' rights away from them. I got to be honest, this not the Badger way from the way the people that I've met here in Wisconsin. Anyway, to talk a little bit more about this in economic policy is Nick Bunker. He works on economic policy at the Center for American Progress, where he is a special assistant. Nick, welcome to the program.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You know, I look at this situation here in Wisconsin and across, really going across the country. If it's not stopped here, it will certainly end up going across this country.
I agree, Rick. It's unfortunate that these attacks on workers are not just in Wisconsin. It's also, you've seen legislation similar to this being proposed in Ohio, Iowa, restricting collective bargaining rights for teachers, states like Florida, and then, of course, the right to work bill that they're trying to pass in Indiana, which caused those senators to leave the state.
I understand in Indiana, though, that the Republicans have agreed to withdraw that bill. But the Democrats have said, yeah, we want that and the voucher bill as well withdrawn because they're both toxic and they're both destructive to the working people of the state.
Yeah, exactly. And even Mitch Daniels, the governor, the Republican governor of Indiana, has said that he wanted the Republicans to repeal the law to stop the debate on the law because he thought there were more important issues to deal on. So when you have a Republican governor saying something like that, you know something's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is there's probably bigger fish to fry, bigger paydays down the road. And why take on what's going on here in Madison if you're a governor in Indiana or Ohio or Pennsylvania, where we're from, or even New Jersey? Why ignite this kind of rage? And rage isn't even the right word for here. I don't know that these people here in Madison could have any rage because these are some of the nicest folks I've met. But this kind of an uprising, if you will, why get into that?
That's a good point. And unfortunately, it's not just the states where this is happening. You're also seeing at the federal level with the new Republican majority in the House, they're trying to pass a new continuing resolution to fund the government. But unfortunately, part of that bill is they're trying to cut $50 million from the National Labor Relations Board's budget. So according to the NLRB, that means they would have to furlough all their staff for about 55 days. So that means you had 55 days where workers wouldn't have essentially a court to go to if they had any complaints they wanted to file against their employers. So essentially Republicans, the bill that they've passed this last week and are trying to have become law, which shuts down the courts for workers.
Wow, that sounds like a great idea to me, because what I would say then is when they're out, when there's no NLRB to go to solve industrial disputes, I say every worker in the country go out on strike. We have general strikes across the country and chaos, because it's my understanding, Nick, and you know maybe if you've got some information different than me, you go back to when we passed the Labor Relations Act. That was to have industrial peace. That was to stop all of the strikes that went on by bringing people to the table. If we're no longer encouraging parties to go to the table and talk, let's have chaos.
Well, I don't know about that, but just to get back to your point about the going after public sector workers, it's interesting because the kind of line of attack that conservatives have been going after public sector workers is saying that they're overpaid, that we can't afford to pay these people these kind of wages and benefits. But if you actually look at it, that public sector workers aren't overpaid. There was a study done by the Economic Policy Institute here in Washington, D.C., and they found that if you compare public sector workers to similar workers, same skill level, same education in the private sector, public sector workers actually make less.
Yep.
So the evidence for what Republicans and conservatives saying is even far less than you even looks at first glance.
Yeah, I was being facetious, Nick. I wasn't advocating for chaos. The idea here is that if you're going to defund the one thing that's supposed to and was passed solely to keep industrial peace, to keep labor and management talking to each other and making those decisions, if you're talking about doing away with that, what possibly could come of it? What good? Honestly, I do see that there would be a lot of major problems. And look, labor gave up a lot in the National Labor Relations Act. The right to strike in a lot of cases because you go to the board and you have these discussions. So it's amazing to me that the pro-business Republicans would want that avenue shut down to them. It's amazing to me.
And what's been more surprising is that was the less extreme of two options. There actually was an amendment to the continuing resolution that's sponsored by a Republican that would have completely defunded the NLRB and would have just totally wiped out the entire institution funding-wise for the rest of this fiscal year.
I mean, doesn't this really, when you look at all of the assaults on working people, it just goes to show the venom that the right has for working people.
That's true, and part of this is that with working people and unions specifically are a important part of the political coalition that gets Democrats elected. So if you're a Republican and you're looking for ways to make sure that Democrats have a hard time getting elected, you go to where the main supporters are, and that's the unions and working people.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Nick, and this is what I've been saying for years. There used to be labor-friendly Republicans. It wasn't until the Republican Party became so ideologically opposed to working people and so deeply in the pockets of corporate America and the big multinationals that working people started going, well, the only place we can go is the Democratic Party. Look, I would love to vote for a Republican because there are a lot of things I may agree with them on, but it's their stance on organizing, their stance on labor, that you just cannot possibly vote for them. And it's these insane stances, it's this kind of stuff that Scott Walker's doing that takes working class citizens of this country to look at them and go, why would I vote for a Republican?
It's a shame that you see Republicans going into tax and pretty much just trying to, it's purely political. Any rationale they have that has to do with balancing budgets or any other kind of rationale, it's just a way to block out what they're really trying to do, and that's score political points.
Absolutely. What are you seeing in Washington? What kind of messaging are you getting? Because some of the messaging I'm getting about what's going on here in Madison, and not accurate. There's very little accurate reporting going on, in my opinion. To be honest, I haven't seen many national reporters here, but not accurate. They're worried that the thugs are going to take over. When this is a place where they've set up a child care center and they've got lists for people to clean the Capitol and all of these things that are going on that, well, really democratic processes, if you will.
Yeah, I agree. And while I have seen reports of supportive reports from Wisconsin here in D.C., I mean, that it depends on where you get your news from. But the message of what's going on in Wisconsin and what they're standing up for, I think, has not only reached Washington, but it's also reached the rest of the country. So hopefully that message gets out more and people realize what some politicians are trying to do this country and put to Wisconsin and other states as examples of what we can do to stop those efforts.
Well, let's talk for a second. I got about 2 minutes left here. For a second, because a lot of people, the majority of people in the country are not members of a union. They don't understand, and I think this is a great opportunity to educate people. They don't understand why having unions benefits them. Have you guys done any research on how labor, maybe brings up the wage structure that helps working families? Have you done any work on something like that?
Well, there's been research done by us and several other research institutions to talk about how unions are good for working people, how there's unions, union workers have higher wages than non-union workers, how unions have been important in fighting, have been important players in fighting for important legislation like the federal minimum wage and healthcare reform, and they're as important political actors for middle-class policies for working families.
Like minimum wage and, like child labor laws and weekends and all of those things that unions brought us. But, we don't need them anymore. We don't need unions anymore because we've got all those things. Wonderful stuff. Anyway, Nick.
Yeah, and
Nick, I appreciate your time, buddy. You guys do great work over there at the Center for American Progress. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
All righty. Nick is a special assistant with economic policy over there. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. Stick around. We're here in Madison, Wisconsin.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Let's take a little trip to Ironing, Arizona. It's not a town, but a concept, though the state's political leaders don't seem at all familiar with it. Claiming to represent the will of the people, they've enacted the most freewheeling gun-toting laws in America. No state has fewer restrictions. Which brings us to Irony. A recent poll reveals that far from being a wild bunch of devil-may-care gun-slinging ideologues, a majority of Arizonans actually want tougher gun laws. Overall, 55% of the residents favor more stringent controls. Of course, this is the state where Jared Lee Loeffner gunned down Representative Gabrielle Giffords and a parking lot full of people in January. Using a 30-bullet semi-automatic pistol, the shooter pulled off his massacre in just a few seconds. Yet, the intractable gun lobby's absolutist political apologists see no problem with such mass-slaughtering machines being loose on the land. The problem, explains Oklahoma Senator Tom Coburn, ironically medical doctor, is that Loeffner is, quote, a mentally deranged person who should not have had access to a gun. Wow, that's progress.
Let's have a sanity test before you can buy a murderous 30-bullet weapon in an unregulated gun show. In fact, New Jersey Senator Frank Lautenberg has introduced a bill in Congress to require just that. But wait, where does Senator Coburn go? Neither he nor any of his Republican colleagues have signed on as co-sponsors of this tiny step toward gun sanity, a step that could have saved many of the dead and wounded in that Arizona parking lot. This is Jim Hightower saying, now, back to irony. The poll found that 92% of Arizona voters want to keep the mentally ill from buying guns, with 93% of Republicans most strongly in favor of this. Of course, good luck to them in getting their politicians to support it.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Yeah, I guess they do here. They absolutely know, and it's a guy named Scott Walker and a whole bunch of Republicans, except the three. There are two. There's reports that the third Republican has come forward and said, you know what, we got to end this divisiveness. Let's get back to doing the business of the people. Let's get back to doing what we were sent here to do, which is create jobs and to make the economy work for everyone. A couple of quick mentions to our friends at the Montana AFL-CIO. Thanks for tuning in. Also, our good friend, Frank Emspeck of Workers Independent News. He produces those great 3-minute news clips at the beginning of the hour. He's been doing that for the last 10 years. It was good to get him out of the office because he's given us some office space to do our program from. Good to see him get out of the office with the great people of OPEIU. So real good to see that happen, and a good union as well. I got an email during the break. Richard writes, the thing that blows my mind about teacher pay and benefit is you get what you pay for. If you asked virtually any normal parent, if they take $1 million for their kid, they would tell you that their kid isn't for sale at any price. But if you ask a Porsche owner where he takes his car for service, he'll probably say Pep Boys. Will he say Pep Boys? No, it's a Porsche. I take it to Auto House. So the reality here is, you know, you got parents who they won't take money for their kids. They want the best for their kids, and he points this out. So who do you want teaching your kids? Do you want some schmuck off the street? You know, like the Pep Boys analogy, the guy who, oh yeah, I can find the part if they give me the right number. Or do you want somebody who really knows what they're doing? And you look at this report that I saw today. In states where collective bargaining is illegal, states like South Carolina, states like North Carolina, states like Georgia, states like Texas and Virginia, illegal. Their SAT, ACT scores, starting at number 50, working their way up, South Carolina, number 50, North Carolina, number 49, Georgia, number 48, Texas, number 47, and, oh, Virginia, a big jump up to number 44. Now, you come to a place like Wisconsin, collective bargaining for their teachers, number 2 in the country. Do you think that's by accident? Because I don't. You get what you pay for. And if you pay decent teachers, professional teachers, like the guy we met at Mitchell Ost, I believe his name was, who told the story, look, man, this is the job I've always wanted. In this community, in this school district, went to the school here, wanted to be in this community, spent his entire life up to this point working for this job, at a wage that he could support his family. He's like, if you take that away, I got to move.
Just last night, after the show, we usually go back to our hotel room, and I know I like to watch the Ed show. He actually came to this town, interviewed one of the teachers who's been teaching for about 20 years, just like you said, just a terrific person, family person, mother of a couple kids, loves her job, been teaching for 20 years, and she said, if they don't have collective bargaining, she said, that's going to provide a real hardship and I might have to get out. And those are the kind of impacts on the system. I mean, if why would we want to cut back in education when we don't have to? Just defies logic. We are preparing the future leaders of this nation. And you want to gut them? It makes no sense at all.
Well, it makes sense if, you know, as George Carlin says, you want people smart enough to push the buttons but not smart enough to ask why. It makes perfect sense. You want people that are easily manipulated. You want people who are not critical thinkers. I mean, anybody who would support this guy in this effort, especially these T-twits, you know, come on. This is exactly the stuff that they were railing about in November. An overreaching, overpowerful, overarching government who's tyrannical. And they're using the power of the fist to come down upon us. This is what this is, man. This is stealing somebody's rights.
Doesn't it appear, though, Rick, and I think to me, this is just my take. More and more I see of the Tea Party people, it seems that their movement has been taken over by the anti-government segment, the anti-government faction. Because some of them, when they originally came out, they were... You and I actually agree with them on some things, but you don't see that expressed in their movement anymore. You certainly don't see any elected officials that have come from the Tea Party movement.
Yeah, it's just amazing, amazing stuff. And... You know, at a certain point, I think people are waking up. I think people are seeing what this really is about. It's about political power. It's about going after, it's about going after your political enemy and really, really squeezing them to death.
You mentioned something about right here where this is very, really critical. What our listeners have to understand, the labor movement is looking for that third Republican to back off. And if they can do that, they can deny the governor his votes to get it passed in the Senate. When I left the rally tonight, there were people taking signatures. What for? To sign up if they have to follow through in a recall.
I looked at the
law. It's not that tough in this state. It goes on. It goes by a certain percentage, which is mandated by the Constitution, on what showed up the prior election. Then if it gets on the ballot... It's by a majority. So it can be done. And make no mistake, the enemies of labor are watching this, and they're watching it closely.
This is that PATCO moment. And labor has responded, and you got to give them credit. But at the end of this, it comes down to some very interesting, really some other interesting themes, like that of a contract. You know, the idea of contract enforcement. If we no longer have to accept workers' contracts, do we have to accept CEO contracts? If we no longer have to honor the contract between the state and its workforce, do I have to honor my contract between my house and my bank? At some point, how does that work? And Fire Dog Lake had an interesting bit of numbers in that they were looking at the total liabilities of the Wisconsin Pension Fund. One of the things that Walker is saying is going to bring down the state, and the Republicans are saying, well, you know, all these generous pensions and all of these liabilities, they're going to kill us. Wisconsin, amazingly, in their numbers, in a study in 2008 by Pew, showed that the total liabilities for the Wisconsin Pension Fund was about $77 million, a little over $77 million. The total unfunded liability was about $252,000, which means that Wisconsin's pension fund is 99.67% funded. They really do not have a funding problem. Evidently, they've been doing the right thing, but you've got a governor who's an opportunist. And what they did over at Fire Dog Lake, and they say, well, if we have to take these teachers' pensions away, if we have to take away these contractual obligations, let's take a look at the CEOs of the big banks that we gave TARP money to. And you go down the list, Bank of America took $45 billion. They handed out $3.3 billion of that in bonuses to their CEOs. New York Mellon Bank, they took $3 billion, handed out almost $1 billion in gifts to their CEO. Citibank took $45 billion, handed out $5.3 billion to their CEOs. And at the end of the top 10, all the way down the list, we gave those banks $175 billion. Here, have a gift. They handed out almost $33 billion of that to their CEOs and to their top people. They must not have been in really that bad a shape if you think about it. When we gave all that money and they handed it out, and yeah, here you go. Because we need to make sure that our best and brightest are well funded. We need to make sure that the bonuses for the CEOs in Wall Street and in the auto dealers and all these places, the CEOs, we need to be able to give them all this money because we might not be able to attract qualified people. Oh, we might not be able to attract qualified people. What about the teachers who are teaching the next generation what most family values people want to say is our most precious asset? We want some minimum wage schmuck teaching our kids, but you know, hey, to run our big companies, we need the best and the brightest. We need to hand out billions of dollars, but we're going to begrudge a tier of a reasonable health care plan, of some security in old age, and oh, I don't know, maybe a little bit of income so that they can buy their own apples and occasionally a pear for lunch instead of depending on the students to bring it in. Doesn't make an awful lot of sense to me, but that's what they want. They want to steal those away from the working class. And you listen to Republicans, Jake, who are talking about letting cities go bankrupt.
Yep.
This idea is theft. It's pure and simple what it is. It's theft. And not only theft, it's burdening the taxpayers. Because eventually all of those pension liabilities end up where? On the backs of the taxpayers. Because there will be a riot in this country if you take every municipal employee, every state, local government person, you steal their pensions. They will end up on the back of the PBGC, which is who? You and me.
And what the average person doesn't understand, when cities go bankrupt, you're basically blackmailing them into go to the source of where they can get their hands on some money to survive, and that ultimately means a lot of times it means privatizing services or selling off assets, which, by the way, were bought by the very taxpayers who are then going to be screwed. And that's what we face all over the country.
Yeah, but you come back to this, and it's amazing stuff. And remember, the Republicans, they said they were going to create jobs. They said, man, we know how to create the jobs. We're going to get government out of the way. The job creators go. But what have they done since taking over? What have they actually done to create any jobs? Everything I see them doing is aiming at destroying jobs, tearing down the living standards of the workers in this country, not just public sector, but private sector as well, stealing your rights and taking away your ability to support your family. That is the Republican Party mantra. Why? They can put more money in people's pockets like the Koch brothers so they can fill up the Walmart coffers. So that they can pander to their billionaire class campaign donors. That's what this is about. I wish it were about something more lofty. I wish it were something better. But at the end of the day, it's about money and it's about power. And that's the end of that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Fred Clark, a state representative here in Wisconsin, one of the guys who has come out in front of the job-destroying budget repair bill that our boy here, Scott Walker, has proposed. Again, not thinking. Every piece of legislation has consequences. This one has some consequences as well. And when we come back, Fred Clark's going to talk about that. Among other things, we're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Where common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
Remember back in November, the Republicans ran on this idea that they knew how to create jobs. They were going to unleash the job creation in the country. Yet all I see, divisiveness, all I see is lack of vision, lack of leadership, and things that they do take leadership on, actually are going to cost us jobs. Now, I look at this press release that I got from State Representative Fred Clark here in Wisconsin, talking about the forest industry. Amazing stuff. That's why I've got State Representative Fred Clark here on the program. Representative, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You know, in November, they ran on this jobs platform, yet I'm looking at this budget repair bill, and it looks like your governor's going to kill thousands of jobs.
Well, unfortunately, that does appear to be the case. We're right in session as we speak. The moment we're debating the issue of federal transit funding that comes to states to help support bus and taxi and municipal transit systems. And guess what? That funding comes with some strings attached, one of which is to assure the rights of workers in the systems to collectively bargain. If we pass this bill in Wisconsin to eliminate collective bargaining rights for employees, we're going to threaten millions of dollars worth of federal funding just for transit aid alone. So, yeah, unfortunately, ideology is trumping good business practices, and it's trumping our ability to actually attract people and jobs to Wisconsin. That's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. You know, what's interesting is you have a governor much like the guy in Ohio and in Florida who evidently doesn't want to have public transportation, doesn't want to have 21st century infrastructure. In fact, a guy from Milwaukee emailed me during the program last night and said, you know, I'd love to come up to Madison, but I don't have a car. And if it were the 1950s, I could have taken a train into town. But thanks to this governor, I can't get there.
Nope, and unfortunately, thanks to this governor, we won't see a train service in this state for another 25 years, probably.
Just a lost opportunity for the people of Wisconsin. Representative Clark, I want to talk a little bit about your press release. You're saying thousands of private sector jobs threatened by the loss of collective bargaining. You're talking about your forest industry, the paper and all that. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure, I can. You know, Wisconsin is the number one paper-making state in the country. We print the paper that goes into Time Magazine and Newsweek and many of the other national market magazines that consumers and readers buy all over the country. We have a strong niche for that market, and a big part of that niche is what's called certification of sustainable forestry. We grow the trees here in Wisconsin on 16 million acres of forest land, and many of the companies that produce that paper are certified because they adhere to the best practices for sustainable management. A long list of things they need to do to prove themselves sustainable. One of them is to assure the rights of workers to collectively organize. And unfortunately, passage of this legislation will put that certification status in jeopardy.
And could jeopardize almost a $21 billion industry.
That's correct. This is one of Wisconsin's strongest industries, the pulp and paper and forest products industry, and employs 300,000 people in this state. We don't have definitive answers right now as to the full effect of this, but that's part of the problem here, is that when we're moving legislation as fast as we are, it's simply impossible to understand and evaluate all of the consequences, unintended or not.
You know, Representative Clark, we've walked around, we've talked to hundreds of people, of the tens of thousands that have been here in Madison, and they all come back to the same thing. This is not the Republican Party that we knew. These aren't our neighbors. These aren't the ideals that we wanted to pursue. And a lot of them are asking, what happened? So I guess I got to ask, is this business as usual in Wisconsin, or is this part of a national strategy that we're seeing played out in places like Ohio and Indiana and possibly in our state in Pennsylvania?
You know, Rick, this is clearly not business as usual. This is not the conservative tradition that conservatives around this state have believed in and understood. You know, quite honestly, we are, unfortunately, what we're seeing proposed here is part of a national agenda to eliminate the power of public employee unions. And that's just one small part of a strategy to limit the scope of government. And as we see this play out, we are, quite honestly, this is a game changer. The 100,000 plus people who have been in this Capitol over the last 10 days opposed to this legislation are telling us, quite honestly, this is not what they signed up for. This has nothing to do with the mandate that Bode may have given on November 2nd. Nobody was buying the idea, and nobody campaign on the idea of eliminating the rights of workers to organize in the workplace.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. To me, November was about an anger that there weren't enough jobs being created, that unemployment was still high. I really don't think we wanted to get into a whole bunch of really extreme ideas. We just wanted some movement on jobs. And what I'm seeing here, especially from your governor here in Wisconsin, is this working to destroy jobs and make things worse.
Well, unfortunately, that seems to be the case. Apparently, we want jobs in this state, but only if they're low-paying jobs for large corporations. We don't seem to be very interested in jobs for small and medium-sized businesses, though we don't seem to be very interested in protecting decent middle-class jobs in the public sector. And come on, that's a huge part of the employment base, especially in small towns in this state.
Yeah. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Wisconsin State Representative Fred Clark, here from Madison, Wisconsin. Representative, during the November elections, we kept hearing this phrase over and over again. We're going to run government like business. And as we've seen the last 30 years, business has been assaulting their workers, stealing their rights. I guess that's what we're seeing. They're living up to a campaign pledge. They are going to try and run government like a business and more like a, you know, like a feudal government, if you will.
Well, I have to tell you, Rick, you know, to hear the public be convinced as a result of right-wing radio talk show hosts and huge amounts of spending by some very wealthy special interests who are leading members of the public to believe that public employees are the problem, that the cops and the firefighters and the snowplow drivers and the healthcare workers that work for state and local governments and the school teachers, that they're really the problem here. And they're the reason why we have a fiscal deficit. Quite honestly, it could be further from the truth. And so we're here today to protect our greatest asset, which is our public employees, make sure they maintain those rights, because quite honestly, the standards that we set in the state for employment, that's a benchmark that other private companies have to try to meet.
Absolutely.
And that's raising the bar for everybody.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've been most amazed about walking through the streets here in Madison is the overwhelming support of actual small businesses. I'm not talking about Halliburton or the big law firms or the big Wall Street traders. I'm talking about local people, local businesses, and really just the amazing support that I've seen from them.
It's exactly right, and I've been overwhelmed by support from people who aren't, they're not part of organized labor, they're not public employees, but you know what, they know public employees, and they understand the value they provide in our communities, and we have had business owners, private individuals, retirees, school children, high schoolers, you name it, down here to stand up for what they understand is a really important battle for the rights of workers.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, the nicest protest, the nicest people I think I've ever met. This really just an amazing event. As I said last night on the program, a family event. The number of people who are sleeping in the Capitol with their children, just really grabbed me.
Rick, it's astounding. I was walking through the halls last night at in the middle of the night as we're in session here. There are hundreds of people camped out in every hallway, and you're absolutely right. This has been a completely peaceful display of civic-mindedness on the part of citizens from all over the state.
I actually saw college kids on the floor, on their hands and knees, washing the floor. I was going to take video and send it back to their parents to see if they'd clean their house like they were cleaning the people's house. Amazing.
It is amazing. And whenever this group leaves here, they will leave this building like they found it. And with a crowd bigger than a football stadium coming through here, that's really something to say.
Now, last bit of questioning I have for you. All night long, you guys have been in session. You planned on going for, I'm not sure, probably into tonight as well. What's being done as we speak?
We're introducing amendments. Quite honestly, our commitment is to kill this bill.
Right.
But short of that, we are going to continue to introduce amendments to address every weakness, every unintended consequence, every terrible proposal that's embedded in this piece of legislation. And we are going to, that's our job right now, is to basically do the work of trying to correct all the deficiencies in this proposal, and we will do that as long as it takes.
Hopefully we stop this insanity right here in Wisconsin so that we don't have to do it in Pennsylvania or other states across the country. Last word for you, what do you say to the representatives and the people of Pennsylvania who may end up having to do what you folks are doing here in Madison?
Rick, I appreciate the question. My suggestion is don't go down that road. As our former U.S. Senator Russ Feingold said, you poke a badger in the eye and you find out what you get. I don't think our governor or the small number of people who really were pushing this agenda had any idea the outpouring, the reaction they were going to elicit from the people of Wisconsin. So I think that every other state governor is on notice now that if you mess with collective bargaining rights, you are playing with fire. And we hope that the battle we're having here is a signal to everybody else in this country.
Yep, so no my way or the highway, as your governor has said for the people of Wisconsin. Good for you. Representative Clark, I appreciate your time. Keep up the fight. We are all watching and hoping and cheering for you.
Thanks, Rick. Take care, and I'll be good.
No matter to me.
Why can't we be friends?
United we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Amy Morton, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Yes, I'm grosser than I hate is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is.
Well, you know, that's the truth. You know, every time you turn around, they want to steal something else from us. You look at the last 30 years, wage stagnation. Look at the last 30 years, destruction of the working class. You look at the destruction of the standard of living of those of us who find ourselves in the middle. And I think Chris Christie is right, the governor of New Jersey. I think he's right. There is a force working to destroy the middle class in this country, and it's not the unions. That's the meme that he keeps throwing out. Well, these unions want to destroy the middle class. No. It's not the unions who are going after people's wages. It's not the unions who are going after their standard of living. It's you. It's the politician who panders to big business. And that goes across the spectrum. It's not just Republicans. It's not just Democrats. It's all of them. You look at our insane trade agreements. That wasn't a Republican or a Democratic idea. It was both of them. They both did it. And at the end of the day, folks, I'm really hoping out of this comes a new level of commitment to each other, for one, and an awakening to who's on our side. The right knows who's on their side. When Scott Nutwalker knows who his boys are. Scott Walker knows who's behind him. The Koch brothers picked up the phone. What if you called the local governor and said, hey, this is Joe Schmo? He'd go, oh, yeah, click. But when he said, oh, this is David Koch, you know, the guy who's giving you $43,000 for your campaign, gave $1 million to the gubernatorial, the governor's association, going to spend $320,000 on attack ads. You pick up that phone and you have that conversation. And what's interesting, you know, you go back to this, Jake, you go back to this conversation. What grabbed me as the ease that Walker had talking to him, the ease of which his plans flowed off his tongue, the openness, the honesty. Think of that. Honesty from a politician. That's what you got. Why? Because he thought, unlike Mr. Cullen, who isn't one of them, he thought he was talking to one of his own.
Is it any wonder that people have less and less confidence in government? Look at what this man's doing. He's selling the people's government. It is open for sale.
For the highest bidder.
to me, it's one of just a horrendous form of corruption that what is happening here. And people see that, and it just sickens them. A process that is designed to take care of the state and to take care of its people is being turned into an option.
And, you know, to be honest, if it were going to the highest bidder, I don't think I'd be upset. The problem is $43,000 is not a lot of money. I mean, to you and me, it's a lot of money. But in the big grand scheme of things, when you're talking about, you know, a budget, I think, what's their budget? Somewhere around $15 billion a year. When you're talking about a $15 billion budget and all of the money that the state spends and the pension funds and all of this stuff, the really big numbers, giving somebody $43,000 so that you can pick him up and have him on the phone and have him tell you all of his plans, $43,000 is not a lot of money.
Well, I think this governor has stars in his eyes. I think perhaps he's way ahead of the game, and I think, you know, our friend, the lawyer from Pennsylvania, described it exactly right. You know, if he wants to play in the big leagues, he better learn how to play the game, because, you know, he made a major mistake here. But, let's be honest. If you're going to attach yourself to somebody with money, you could do a lot worse than the Koch brothers. They got a lot of money there.
Yeah. Stephanie emails me, and again, if you want to contact us, we would love to take calls, but right now having the phone difficulties, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. And we encourage people to contact us via email anyway. Tell us what you think, your thoughts, ideas, whatever we're talking about. We'd love to hear you weigh in on it. Again, rick@therickSmithShow.com, or just go to therickSmithShow.com, click on contact. Stephanie writes, my good friend is a police officer out of Milwaukee. He was ordered to Madison to help provide security at the Capitol building. He said to me before he left on Sunday that he lauds all of us trying to take on Walker. He also said that, quote, his more intelligent coworkers are all behind labor despite being excluded from Walker's proposal. And don't think for a second that he didn't take out the cops and the firemen for a reason. That's the divide and conquer part of this. The cops and the firemen were next. They knew they were in the shark tank. They knew they were next, which is why, to their credit, they came and they stepped forward and joined, and really in a marvelous fashion. Today we marched down the street with the firemen, with the bagpipes, and it was really, you know, people stopped their cars, beeping the horn. Small business owners came out of their businesses, locked their doors, and joined these firemen walking down the street. It was just an amazing sight, and to see how much people love these firemen and how they have really taken this over a little bit.
I mean, some of the things that have happened, I mean, seriously, you almost have to pinch yourself. Some of the things that you and I have seen, Rick, in the last 3 or 4 days, to a large degree, it'll probably be a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I'm sure there'll be some movies made about what's happening here this week.
No, the only way there'll be movies made out of here is if Walker does what he wants to do. And that's come down with a strong arm and kick those people out of his capital. That's the only way this gets into the movie theaters. It's the only way that this becomes the major history. Now, this is history. These are finally people who are coming together to make their lives better instead of the T-Twizzlers who are trying to tear things down. There's a huge difference here. And it's becoming more apparent every day, because these protests this weekend are supposed to be huge. Tomorrow is supposed to be a huge day with the police and the firemen who are coming out to have their rally. Saturday, I hear, is supposed to be massive. And it's the reason we're here.
You know, you can make a movie and be honest. You could say this is about how labor saved our democracy, and in many ways, that is exactly the battle going on here.
And I agree, but here's the thing. Nobody wants to watch a whole bunch of nice people doing nice things, walking around with trays of hot dogs going, here, have one.
Can you imagine, Rick, now you're from Cleveland.
Look, hold on one second. There are no vendors selling anything on the streets. No T-shirts, no sodas, no water, none of that. You know what they're doing? They're going, oh, you thirsty? Have some water. Well, how much would you like? Remember yesterday? We were walking through the Capitol, and there was a woman standing there with a bucket, and I threw a dollar into her bucket because I thought she was collecting money. No, she was giving out cough drops because she was concerned for the people.
I remember that.
She was concerned for the people there. This is the kind of protest we're at, a protest where people care about each other. And I got to tell you, that speaks volumes for this community. I wish that we had this in Harrisburg. I wish that we had this in Carlisle and in Shippensburg and in Mechanicsburg and all across the listening area. I do. I wish we had this kind of amazing, amazing togetherness. Because that's what it's been, man. And she was, I mean, I threw the dollar in her because I wasn't thinking. I saw somebody with a look like a collection bucket. They haven't been taking up money for food or something.
And she actually almost chased you.
She did.
To give you the dollar back. And then on down the road, we met the IBEW guys who were handing out hot dogs, and they were good. Yep. They weren't just cooked dogs, you know. They were actually good.
They were bratwurst.
My point is, not that I'm demeaning your city, but, you know, cities like Philadelphia and cities like Cleveland are union towns.
Yep.
And I'm not so sure when some of those agitators came in if they would have been, you know, nobody's going to, you know, welcome them with open arms. You know, when you come in there and go into these union towns to try to take their rights away from you, you better be ready for a fight in more than one way. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Amazing stuff here. And a woman bump into me. I've told this story. She was just, oh my, I'm so sorry. Oh my, I'm so sorry. You know, just you know, beyond herself, at four times as big as you are, you can't possibly hurt me. And I thought, well, let me check my wallet because that's my thought process. It was still there.
Yep.
But, you know, where I grew up, somebody bumps into you, check your wallet here. You know, it's a whole different
environment. And in that mass of people where everybody's touching each other, I mean, to get around, you have to. And people are excusing themselves all over the place. It has just been an amazing, amazing experience.
Well, the T-Twizzlers cannot be happy. On Tuesday, a federal judge in D.C. dismissed another lawsuit filed against Obamacare. The lawsuit filed by an organization funded by the insane evangelical figure Pat Robertson argued that the law's mandate to purchase insurance was unconstitutional since it violated the plaintiff's religious freedom to reject medical services and, by extension, insurance. Somehow, I guess you can... I don't know. Anyway, in her 64-page ruling, Judge Gladys Kessler argued that Congress's authority to mandate the purchase of health insurance was constitutional since refusing insurance could be considered an active choice. She wrote in her piece, "It is pure semantics to argue an individual who makes a choice to forego health insurance is not acting, especially given the serious economic and health-related consequences to every individual of that choice." She goes on to say, "Making a choice is an affirmative action, whether one decides to do something or not to do something. There are two sides of the same coin. To pretend otherwise is to ignore reality." Kessler is now the third to rule health care reform constitutional. Now, you have the other two who have ruled it unconstitutional. And as we've been saying for the longest time, we know where this is eventually going to end up. It's going to end up in the Supreme Court. And you know, let's see where the big money donors have put their money in building a conservative Supreme Court. How corporate are our justices? And what does corporate America think? You know, are they going to be able to benefit and profit from this? And that's what it's going to come down to, I think. I have very little faith in the Supreme Court